This is an ABC podcast.
Hi, it's All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. And today, in this Science Week of 2020, a look into the lives of people who've had a spinal cord injury and how scientific research can bring them new hope. First, let's hear from the inspirational Sam Bloom. She's now a twice world champion parasurfer and well known on Instagram to the thousands of followers of the Penguin Bloom account, which tracks the story of how Sam and her family nurtured an injured magpie. Sam became paralysed in 2013 after an accident in Thailand.
Well, my husband and I have always loved travelling, and when we had our three boys, we thought, right, you know, as they grow up, we'll hopefully show them the world. And so we took them to Thailand because we thought, you know, it's pretty close. It's an easy country and the people are lovely. And so we were, it was like, I think day four into our holiday, and we're staying at this really nice hotel just opposite the beach. It was pretty remote. And one of the kids said, let's go up on this rooftop. So we all went up the stairs and I leant on the railing and it broke. It had dry rot and I didn't realise. And it broke and I fell 6 metres and broke my back. That was the start of our holiday. I broke my back at T6, sort of in line with my chest. I also sustained quite a few other injuries. Like I had subdural, extradural hematomas, fractured skull. One of my lungs collapsed because my chest filled with blood. Yeah, a few internal injuries. But obviously breaking my back was the most severe.
What's your first memory after the accident?
I was in theatre and I didn't even realise I was in theatre. I remember someone pulling my T-shirt up and cutting it off. I remember having central line put in my neck, and all I remember was that really, really hurt, and I was just gripping onto the sheet, and then I saw an oxygen mask come down onto my face. And that was my first memory.
And then you spent, I think, 7 months in hospital and rehab. What was your experience of that and your realisations about what had happened?
Well, not great. Yeah, so I was in hospital in Thailand for about 3 weeks, and it's funny, like the Thai people, they're so lovely, and none of the doctors actually told me that I was paralysed. One of the doctors, he was a neurosurgeon, he'd come down from Bangkok, and he said, oh, you know, you're suffering from spinal shock, you know, it should be sort of okay in 6 weeks or so. So I was like, yeah, okay, I can handle that. And it wasn't until I was flown back to Australia and I was at North Shore. And on my second day, I went down for MRI, and that's when the doctor came up and essentially said that I'll never walk again. So I didn't handle that very well because I used to be incredibly active before my accident. Like, I love surfing and mountain biking and playing soccer. So, yeah, I was devastated.
And how did you emerge out of that dark place? You know, how long did you stay in it and how did you cope through that?
I mean, to be honest, I was in it for a very long time. I mean, I had to put on a bit of a brave face. I mean, the kids were only little and, you know, they'd come in and, you know, you don't want to be in tears the whole time. You have to kind of act not tough, but, you know, saying it'll be okay. But no, oh, I was so devastated. Jeez, I don't know. I mean, I was in Royal North Shore for like 3 months. I ended up with like a grade 4 pressure sore on my sacrum. So I was like, you know, in bed pretty much the 3 months, being turned side to side. Probably, I think the reality hit me was, for the first time was when I was at North Shore and I was due to go to rehab. And I remember they're like, okay, we have to get you up and you get you in a wheelchair. And I was just like, you know, oh my God, you know, trying to sit up in bed and like lift your legs over to sort of move them, if you know what I mean, and then try and transfer into a wheelchair. Yeah, I do remember one of the nurses, she was so lovely, and she came up to me and she just goes, are you okay? And I just lost it. So, and when I was at rehab for 3 months. You know, I can't say I loved it, but it was, I don't know, it was kind of, it was just good to be surrounded by other people who, you know, have also, were in the same boat, if you know what I mean, because they get it. They get how devastating it is and how hard it is and the pain and all that. So I guess the big reality check was when I came home from hospital. And I came home and that's when it hit me that this is my life and I didn't like it, because we overlook the beach And we overlooked one of my favourite surf spots of all time. And so I found that really hard. You know, I'd sit in the kitchen and just look at the surf and, yeah, I'd just be so angry and sad that I couldn't get out there. I felt like I was under house arrest.
Sam is an ambassador for Spinal Cure Australia, one of several organisations doing cutting-edge scientific research to improve the quality of life for around 12,000 Australians living with spinal cord injury. And more from Sam Bloom later. Neuroscience Australia, or NEURA, has recently established the Spinal Cord Injury Research Centre with funding from Spinal Cure Australia. Associate Professor Sylvia Gustin from NEURA and the University of New South Wales is dedicated to this research. She explains the types of spinal cord injury.
So at the moment, we have two different types of spinal cord injury. One type is the complete spinal cord injury type, and that means that people can't feel and move below their level of injury. So, for example, they can't move and feel both legs. And an incomplete injury means they can partially feel below their level of injury. So this means they can partially feel their legs and partially move their legs.
And Sylvia Gustin is excited about a recent discovery by her team. Contrary to previous belief, many people who've lost complete feeling in parts of their body below the injury still have messages about touch going to the brain.
So we recently showed that 50% of people with a complete spinal cord injury still have surviving somatosensory nerve fibers at the level of the spine. In our study, we stimulated the big toe of people with a complete spinal cord injury while they were undergoing an MRI. And although our participants did not feel our touch, a significant signal was forwarded from the toe to the brain. Basically, the brain lit up and said, "Hello, toe." And this became the first objective evidence of discomplete spinal cord injury. The idea that many spinal cord injured people who cannot feel still have touch information forwarded from the periphery. So that means part of their body, for example, the big toe, to the brain. So now the big question is here, why can't they feel the touch, although the touch signal is being forwarded from the toe to the brain? This is very new information.
It was recently announced that Sylvia Gustin and her team will receive $2.5 million from New South Wales Health for their research project called RESTORE. It will investigate this new discovery.
Our RESTORE trial is based on this, and now we really would like to enhance this signal. And we believe that due to the severe spinal cord injury, the signal is so distorted that the brain can't identify it anymore as touch. So when we touch the toe and the signal gets forwarded to the brain lights up, but the brain can't identify it as touch. And therefore, a person with a complete injury can't feel it as touch.
James Stanley is a participant in Sylvia Gustin's spinal cord research. He acquired his injury while he was learning to ride a surfboard.
So I wanted to sort of learn to get up on the board and be able to stand up and surf. And shortly after being in the water, I experienced some bizarre pain that I've never felt before, which caused me to come off the board and sort of not sure why my legs just sort of gave way. I was getting sharp pains in my back. I didn't really understand it. I came out of the water, walking up the beach, I kept collapsing. I really had no idea what was going on at the time, just that I was in excruciating pain and just wanted it to go away.
James was taken to the hospital, and by the time he got there, he couldn't feel or move from the waist down. Eventually, he was diagnosed with a rare injury caused by hyperextension of the back. It's called surfer's myelopathy, one of only 10 cases in the world at the time.
It was just so much shock because, you know, you normally don't expect such a significant impact physically on your body from doing something so simple. they weren't sure whether I'd recover or how I'd recover because it was so little cases, and that I think 8 out of 10 had some form of recovery. And unfortunately, I wasn't going to be the 10th out of that to recover. So I'm permanently paralyzed as a T10 level. And yeah, I had to just work out what I was doing from there. I was a real estate agent and karate instructor, world champion, black belt. So it was, my life was, yeah, just sort of completely flipped upside down. So I'm in a manual wheelchair, but yeah, I've got no use of my legs, like no movement or feeling. I get nerve pain. It's all different kinds of pain. It's like pins and needles, burning, aching, throbbing. I get it in my butt bones, in my toes. Some days are better than worse, but it's all over the place from the waist down in different spots.
So James Stanley, he was a research participant in our study in which we wanted to see if people with a complete injury, if still there is touch signal going from the toe to the brain. And he was one of the lucky ones where we could actually detect a signal in his brain. Also, he couldn't feel the touch. We actually knew that the touch information got forwarded from the toe to the brain. He can't feel the touch, but we know the touch signal is there. And it was amazing. Yeah, I think he was, when I told him, oh my God, it was very emotional because he always thought he has a complete injury. That means for him, he can never feel again.
So you were in the MRI scanner and they just touched your toe with a plastic fork.
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't feel it. But on the scanner that Sylvia was using, it showed the brain registered that my toe had been touched. So the signal was going down to say, yep, it's been touched, but it wasn't then reconnecting to, like, my conscious just sort of registered that that had happened. So finding out that there's something going down there, it was just, it was awesome to find that out because I was like, wow, you know, with research and progress, we can improve our knowledge and understanding of these injuries and bring more hope. But I was over the moon. I was like so excited because I thought, it gives me more hope. It's like, okay, I've got more to work with than nothing now.
James Stanley. You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Today, the hope that the latest scientific research is bringing to people with spinal cord injury. Associate Professor Sylvia Gustine's recently funded research project called Restore could help people like James Stanley regain a sense of touch and feeling which has been lost. It will be based on trials done in collaboration with researchers in the United States, and it uses virtual reality technology.
We are now using virtual reality to teach the brain to identify this signal correctly, identifying it as touch, so that the sense of touch and feeling in people with a complete spinal cord injury can be restored. So using virtual reality, we are actually tricking the brain. So our participants will wear goggles and a haptic arm sensors. And using both the goggles and the haptic arm sensors, every upper movement of the participant is signaled back into the virtual reality experience to create a perception of actually feeling they're walking, climbing, touching, and solving problems. And once they are immersed in this virtual world, this means they have virtually created their own avatar. It's like in the movie The Avatar. You really think it's you. You really believe this is you. The body is you. The hands are you. The legs are you. And once we have achieved this, our participant will receive touch stimulation in the real world. So, for example, we will use a robotic device to touch their foot, while at the same time, they will receive corresponding multisensory touch stimuli in the virtual world. So this means they're in the virtual world, they're experiencing walking up to kick a ball on a soccer field. And when they kick the ball and they really think this is me who's kicking the ball, the robotic device on their foot will touch their foot. And this is a way we can reinforce the signal. And we can learn the brain to recognize the signal as sensation again. So we're really tricking the brain in a way that the brain thinks, yes, this is really me. And we learn the brain again what touch means. The problem is that people would ask and say, oh, look, why do you need virtual reality to do that? We could touch the foot and then the person looks at the foot. But our brain is very intelligent and our brain knows this is a distorted signal. So we really need to teach the brain again. This distorted signal means touch. It's a little bit like conditioning. We condition the brain again that this distorted signal means touch. The beautiful thing, Lynn, is that our brain is plastic. And this means we can really re-alter the brain. We can teach the brain new things. And this is amazing about our brain. It's not static. We can really change our brain, how the brain sees things, how the brain identifies stimuli, and how the brain sees actually the world.
Sylvia Gustine and her team hope to start the Restore trials in 2020. The COVID pandemic has delayed its start. So what are the implications for those people with spinal cord injury whose brain could be trained to feel sensation again? Could this contribute to them being able to walk again?
So in the brain, movement and touch lies next to each other, the centres. So touch is the first instance, but we are also having already visions to restore movement. So movement is not that simple because additionally, you need to train the muscles. So people with a spinal cord injury, they haven't walked for a long time. So you need to train the muscles. You need certain instruments. But touch is the first instance. So we want to use electrical stimulation to the spinal cord. And with this stimulation, we might bring back movement. And this is already done in the world. So in the States and also in Europe, particular trials showed that with electrical stimulation, you can bring back movement. But until now, nobody has brought back touch. And I think touch is something which is really important for our feeling, for our well-being. And it would be wonderful if we could bring back touch to all these beautiful people.
Sylvia says that restoring the sensation of touch could make a real difference to people's quality of life.
A lot of times the problem is also because they can't feel an injury to their legs or to their foot. The problem is it gets infected. So if you can feel again and you can actually feel that you have an infection, so this is already and very important for their life expectancy because that means they get less infections and also for their well-being. When you think about you haven't felt like a touch for years, and suddenly you feel it, that your partner touches you. You feel the sand, you feel the water. It's an unbelievable life quality what this is bringing up. So definitely helps that people don't get serious infections, but also the psychological side and the mental side is really important.
And what difference would it make, that possibility of having sensation in that part of your body, in your toes, that you haven't had for years?
I would love to be able to feel soft grass again. There's certain things that I would love to feel again, feelings that probably the average person doesn't even think twice that they're doing, like scrunching my toes in sand or feeling soft grass or dipping your toes into a pool that first time before you dive in. Those little sensations are things that I miss that we all sort of just would regularly do. We just, oh yeah, dip my toe in the pool, that's all right, it's a bit cold. You know, we don't think twice about it. So those little simple things is definitely what I miss and have hope for that will come one day with more research and looking into recovery processes. I look forward to that day.
After the injury and your realisation that you were paralysed, you must have gone to a very dark place. How did you manage to pull yourself out from there and to keep going to the point now where you have quite a lot of hope?
It was hard. It was absolutely devastating. I went through quite a battle with different mental health areas of not feeling like life's worth it and that I've lost my own personal ambitions I wanted to do in life. But I still had this glimpse that one day I'm going to walk. But my family and my friends are a strong key to being able to battle and deal with everything that you go through when you go through such a traumatic thing. Like, they were there for me day and night, and they just pulled me through a lot of dark places. And so we've just always had a bit of hope. Being part of the project with Sylvia gives me hope. If you invest some money and invest time into looking into something like this, you're going to change a massive group of people and their quality of life. A lot of people with spinal injuries are quite strong people, and they're working, they're studying, they're in sports and Olympics and different things like that. But giving that change and that, having that opportunity to improve their physical being, massive change to their overall quality of life, long term as well.
James Stanley. Sam Bloom is also deeply committed to supporting spinal cord injury research, and maintaining hope is crucial. One of the things that helped Sam through her dark times was the arrival of an injured baby magpie called Penguin.
We found Penguin about 3 months after I came home from hospital.
And Penguin was a baby magpie.
Magpie, yep. And my middle son, Noah, just found Penguin. She'd been blown out of her nest because it was a really windy day. Noah found her in the grass next to my mum's house. So we thought if we left her there, she'd die. So we picked her up and brought her home, and she stayed with us. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was sort of like she's, I don't know, brought a bit of happiness into our lives, because I felt like all I'd brought was just sadness. So it was nice to have a change. And I loved it because, you know, the kids were back at school and Cam would go to work and I was sort of home alone. So having Penguin was just lovely to have some companionship and something to look after and talk to. So, yeah, so she was with me all day, every day, which was, yeah, I loved it.
And how long did she stay?
2 years. Oh, yeah, it was funny. I remember one summer, she left, I think it was like on Christmas Day, and then it was about 6 weeks, and we thought, oh no, you know, something had happened to her. You know, I don't know, we kind of thought the worst. And it was our eldest son, it was his 13th birthday, and I remember saying to him on his birthday, I was like, oh, imagine if Penguin came back today. You know, it was kind of like, yeah, ha ha. And we're at my mum's just having a little birthday party for him, and someone called Cam saying, oh, I think Penguin's inside my house. So Cam raced over, picked Penguin up and brought her back to our house. Yeah, and we surprised Reuben when we got home that she came back for his birthday.
Fantastic.
It was really cool.
During her rehab and recovery from her accident, Sam was longing for her old surfing days. She wanted to become active, outdoors, to be on the water again.
When I was at rehab, there was a sports recreational officer who was fantastic, and he knew, you know, kind of how much I loved sport beforehand. I remember whinging to him, you know, saying, I'll never play soccer, I'll never surf, I'll never mountain bike, you know, kind of the list went on. And then I said to him, maybe I could kayak. And so he's like, right. And so about 2 or 3 weeks after I got out of rehab, yeah, I was on the water kayaking, which was fantastic. I just loved it.
And then 5 years later, Sam began surfing on a board again.
It took me about 5 years to get back out on a surfboard because I was a little bit stubborn. Well, it was my first summer when I got home from rehab, and we're up at Palm Beach just swimming. Cam took me swimming, and a friend of ours was up there with his surfboard, and he's like, oh, come on, Sam, get on. And I was like, no, no, no. And then he's like, come on, get on. And so I got on, I caught a wave, and I was like, no, that's not surfing to me. And so, yeah, it took me 5 years to get back out on the board, but I'm so glad I did because I love it.
So you're still paralysed from the chest down,
yeah.
But you ride a surfboard.
Yeah.
How is
well,
that?
Well, I lie down. It's almost like big boarding now. I ride like a normal short board, but it's got like a handle at the front, just one handle. So I get pushed onto the waves, usually by Cameron, my husband. And so I grab the handle with one hand and usually like the rail, like the side of the surfboard, to turn. So yeah, it's great. I mean, obviously it's not the same, but I mean, nothing is the same anymore. But yeah, it is, it's so much fun.
And you've gone on to become a world champion.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, it was awesome. So I went in a competition in Australia. Geez, that was in 2018. And it was just up the coast you know, I thought that would be a bit of fun going in a surfing comp. And, yeah, and I did okay and I got on the Australian team. And so in December of that year, we went over to San Diego to compete in the World Championships. And, yeah, I know I won, which was unreal. It was so exciting. I'm pretty competitive. So, yeah, no, it was great. And then we did it again in March. Two-time world champion.
You must be so determined. What do you think has helped you be so determined and to be so resilient?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I think it's my family, like Cam and the boys. You know, they've been there for me the whole time. I just feel like, I don't know, I have to be resilient and try and be as, I guess, brave as I can for the boys. You know, they've been through enough and I have to try my best to be my best self sort of thing for them.
Fantastic. And you've become an influential advocate for people with spinal cord injury now. Why is this research so important for you?
Well, yeah, because I'm an ambassador for Spinal Cure Australia and, like, they are so committed to find a cure, which obviously is, like, that would be just extraordinary. I mean, it's so life-changing, you know, when you suffer a spinal cord injury. Geez, like, when they find a cure, you have no idea how happy so many millions of people around the world will be. Now, I had my accident when I was, like, 41, and in a way I was sort of lucky. I'd done a lot of travelling, you know, married, had kids. Up until that time, I'd done everything I wanted to do. And when I see, like, young people and, you know, here in a wheelchair, I don't know, it breaks my heart. So there'd be nothing better than to find a cure so they can get on with their lives and, you know, do what they'd always dreamed of.
Sam Bloom's story has been made into a Hollywood movie called Penguin Bloom, to be released in cinemas early next year. Australian actress Naomi Watts plays Sam.
I mean, Naomi, she is so lovely. Like, she's incredibly down to earth, very compassionate. Like, we gelled, you know, as soon as we met. Yeah, it was a crazy experience. It was amazing. I mean, it was obviously sad. They actually filmed in our house. And so I was on set a lot. And so she'd ring me and say, you know, Sam, what are you doing? I'm like, well, no, not much. And so she'd be like, oh, can you please come on set? You know, for example, if they were filming her getting dressed, she wanted me to watch just to make sure that it looked real, which I really appreciated. So, yeah, we had a lot of input into, I guess, what it is like to be in a wheelchair and be paralysed. So, yeah, I loved the way that they were trying to make it as real and honest as possible.
So what hopes do you have for yourself in the future now?
I am obviously hanging out for a cure. I mean, that would just be extraordinary. But I don't think about it every day because it's cost a lot of money for, like, all these amazing scientists to try and find a cure. And I know it's going to take time. I think just try and keep on living the best life I can and keep surfing. I want to become a three-time world champion.
I really admire your spirit. That's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Sam Bloom, Ambassador for Spinal Cure Australia. And thanks also to James Stanley, who's so committed to spinal cord injury research. Head to the All in the Mind website for further information related to today's program. And for more of the ABC's offerings during this Science Week, go to abc.net.au/Science Week. All in the Mind's producer is Diane Dean, and the sound engineer today is John Jacobs. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.